Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a really interesting corner of Florida legal history, the 1986 Supreme Court case Parrott v. Adams. Now, as a law student, you're always dealing with that balance, right? Between legal theory and how things actually work on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, it's a perfect example of where those two can, well, collide.
Yeah.
Specifically around how judges get assigned. We're going to dig into how this decision set the limits for temporary judicial assignments in Florida and, maybe more importantly, why those limits are there.
That's right. And what makes Parrott so compelling isn't just the, you know, the legal outcome itself, but the tension it highlights. It asks, basically, can we bend constitutional rules just to make the court system run a bit smoother?
Administrative convenience, right?
Yeah.
And the Florida Supreme Court in this case said a pretty firm no. By understanding this, you really get a better grasp on why sticking to the basic structure of government is so critical, even when it seems kind of inconvenient. Okay, so to really get why the Supreme Court landed where it did, we need the backstory. Let's set the scene. What exactly was Manuel Parrott facing, and where did all this go down?
Right. So Manuel Parrott was up against felony charges in Palm Beach County. But the twist was where his case was supposed to be heard. This place called the Glades Jury District.
The Glades District.
Yeah, and this district is really key. It was a more rural part of the county. Logistically, it just didn't have a circuit court judge stationed there regularly. I think, you know, pretty far from the main courthouses.
So right off the bat, you see the practical issue. If you need a circuit judge somewhere, but there isn't one usually there, how did Palm Beach County try to fix that?
Well, the solution they landed on involved administrative orders. The chief judge of the circuit issued these orders, and they consistently assigned a specific county judge, Don Adams, to handle the circuit court cases in the Glades District.
Okay, assigning a county judge, but was this just like a temporary fill-in?
That's the crucial part. It wasn't just a short-term fix for someone being out sick or something.
Mm-hmm.
Judge Adams had been doing this job for 5 full years.
5 years.
5 years.
Yeah.
And these administrative orders, they were just renewed year after year. So yeah, that's a significant stretch of time.
Wow, 5 years of renewals. That definitely starts to feel less temporary and more like, well, the normal way things were done there. So how did Parrott challenge this? What was his argument?
Parrott's argument was pretty direct. He basically said, look, this long-term setup has effectively made Judge Adams a permanent circuit judge in the Glades District, but without following the rules laid out in the Florida Constitution for becoming a circuit judge.
Which are
either being elected by the peoples or appointed by the governor. Parrott argued this whole administrative order thing was a workaround, bypassing those constitutional requirements.
So he's basically saying the judge hearing my serious felony case didn't get this position the way the Constitution says they're supposed to.
Exactly.
Hmm.
That was the core of it. And he took that argument up through the courts. How did that go initially?
He had a roadblock at first, didn't he?
He did, yeah. He lost at the 4th District Court of Appeal. They probably figured, you know, chief judge has administrative power, temporary assignments are allowed. Seems okay. But Parrott kept going. He took it to the Florida Supreme Court.
And that's where things changed.
That's where things changed, absolutely.
So what was the Florida Supreme Court's take? How did they view Judge Adams's 5-year stint in the Glades District?
They were very clear. They didn't buy the series of temporary assignments argument. Instead, they called his position a de facto permanent circuit judgeship in that district.
De facto permanent, meaning permanent in practice, even if not officially labeled that way.
Precisely. And because of that, they found the whole setup unconstitutional. It just didn't follow the constitutionally mandated path for selecting circuit judges.
Okay, let's dig into that constitutional piece a bit more. Which part of the Florida Constitution was the problem here?
It all comes down to Article V. That's the part of the Florida Constitution that sets up the judicial branch. And Article V is really clear about how you become a circuit judge. You're either elected by the voters in that circuit, or if there's a vacancy, you're appointed by the governor.
Right. Election or appointment. That's it.
Those are the pathways. And the Supreme Court basically said this system of just repeatedly assigning Judge Adams, a county judge, to do all the circuit work in that area for 5 years, that effectively created a new circuit judge position without using either of those pathways. It sidestepped the whole constitutional framework.
But wait, doesn't the Constitution allow for temporary assignments? Isn't there some flexibility built in?
Ah, yes. Good point. Article V, Section 2B does give the chief judge of a circuit the power to assign judges temporarily to other courts within the circuit. That includes assigning county judges to circuit duty. It's necessary, you know, for covering illnesses, handling big caseloads.
So how did the court reconcile that provision with their ruling here?
They drew a really critical line. They said, yes, temporary assignments are allowed, but temporary has to actually mean temporary. It can't be a loophole used to create what is, in effect, a permanent position through endless administrative orders.
That distinction makes a lot of sense. A short-term fix versus something that just becomes the way things are done year after year. Did anyone on the court phrase this particularly strongly?
Oh, definitely. Justice Ehrlich, writing for the majority, put him very bluntly. He wrote, "Constitutional provisions can't be ignored for convenience."
Wow, that cuts right to the chase.
Doesn't it? It really sums up their thinking. Sure, maybe this assignment system was convenient, maybe it solved a practical problem, but convenience doesn't override the Constitution's fundamental rules.
You mentioned the court looked at precedent. How did Parrott compare to other cases about temporary assignments? Were there situations where similar things were allowed?
Yes, they specifically contrasted it with an earlier case, Crusoe v. Rouse. In Crusoe, the court had approved temporary assignments of county judges to help out in circuit court.
Okay, so what was the difference? Why was Crusoe okay, but Parrott wasn't?
The key difference was the nature and really the scope of the assignment. In Crusoe, the county judges were acting more like supplements. They were helping the existing circuit judges, maybe handling certain types of cases or clearing backlogs. They weren't the only judge handling circuit matters in a whole area.
Ah, so Crusoe was about adding help, but Parrott was about replacing the circuit judge entirely for that district.
Exactly that. In Parrott, Judge Adams wasn't just lending a hand. He was, for all intents and purposes, the circuit judge for the Glades District. He handled all the circuit cases there. That complete substitution, coupled with a 5-year duration, made it fundamentally different from Crusoe in the court's eyes. It looked like a permanent role, not temporary help.
So the length of time, 5 years, and the breadth of responsibility handling all circuit cases were the big red flags for the court. Anything else?
Yeah. Beyond duration and scope, they also pointed to the overall impact. By just keep renewing these temporary orders, the system had essentially manufactured a permanent judgeship without the election or appointment process the Constitution demands. It undermines, you know, the whole idea of why we have those processes, accountability, democratic input.
Makes sense. Now, major court decisions often have disagreements. Was there a dissent in Parrott? Did anyone see it differently?
Yes, there was. Justice Overton wrote a dissent, and he raised some important practical points. His main worry was about what this ruling would mean for courts in rural areas like the Glades District itself.
Ah, the efficiency argument again.
Pretty much. He argued that these kinds of administrative setups were often necessary and, frankly, efficient ways to make sure justice got done in places with fewer resources or logistical hurdles. It saved time, saved money, made use of the judges available.
So he was focused on the practical side, ensuring people everywhere had access to the courts, even if it required some administrative flexibility.
Exactly. Overton suggested that maybe these assignments could be okay if, say, the county judge still did their regular county duties and the assignment was clearly marked temporary, maybe with a note that it could change. He was looking for a balance.
So it really came down to that core tension we talked about at the start. Efficiency versus sticking strictly to the constitutional rules.
Absolutely. Overton warned about lost judicial time and difficulties staffing rural courts if the majority opinion stood. But the majority just wasn't swayed. They felt upholding the constitutional process for picking judges was the top priority, even if it created administrative headaches that needed solving in other ways. Convenience, even practical necessity, couldn't rewrite the Constitution's rules for judicial selection.
Okay, so the Supreme Court says this specific 5-year assignment setup is a no-go. But what guidance did they give for the future? Did they draw a bright line like temporary means X number of months, max?
They didn't set a hard and fast rule, like a specific number of days or months. That probably would have been too rigid. But they did lay out some key factors that courts and chief judges should consider when deciding if an assignment is really temporary. It gives guidance without creating inflexible handcuffs.
What kind of factors did they mention?
Well, first, the duration, obviously. While they didn't mandate limits, they did suggest that assignments going past, say, 60 days for full-time circuit work or maybe 6 months for part-time work would start to look suspect. Raise serious questions.
You know? Okay, so time is a big one. What else?
Scope was another. Is the assigned judge handling just a few specific cases, or are they basically taking over all the judicial work for that court or area? Like Judge Adams was. And finally, they flagged the issue of repeated renewals. If an assignment keeps getting extended over and over, that's a strong indicator it's not truly temporary anymore. It's become the status quo, the de facto permanent thing they struck down in Parrot.
Got it. So duration, scope, and repetition. The overall message seems pretty clear. Temporary has to mean something real, not just a label you slap on a permanent arrangement made through administrative orders.
Exactly. The court basically said, look, we get that you need flexibility to run the courts, but that flexibility has limits. And those limits are set by the Constitution. Parrot helped draw that line in the sand.
So stepping back, what's the big takeaway from Parrot v. Adams? Why should a law student today still care about this 1986 case?
Parrot is really fundamental for understanding how Florida's judicial system is supposed to operate administratively. It put real limits on assigning judges, emphasizing that temporary can't just be a convenient fiction. It reinforces that core constitutional principle about how judges are selected, election or appointment.
It connects to bigger ideas too, right? Like separation of powers.
Definitely. It's about maintaining the integrity of the judicial branch as laid out in the Constitution. It shows why we have these specific rules and how they protect the structure of government. Understanding Parrot isn't just about administrative orders. It's about appreciating why procedural rules and constitutional structures matter, even when they seem inconvenient. It's a constant reminder that practical fixes still have to fit within the legal framework.
It really drives home that point. The structure itself is important, and trying to bypass it, even with good intentions, can undermine the whole system.
Absolutely. Parrot is just a great case study showing the courts balancing those everyday needs of running the justice system against the fundamental, long-term requirements of constitutional government. It's crucial for understanding the limits of administrative power within the judiciary.
So the ultimate lesson from Parrot, even when efficiency seems to point one way, protecting those democratic structures and constitutional rules comes first.
That's the heart of it. It's a vital look at how we balance practical needs with enduring legal principles.
Really interesting stuff. It makes you realize how these seemingly technical legal fights shape the very foundations of how our government works.
It does. And as you go through law school, you'll see this tension again and again. Practical needs versus constitutional structure. It's a core concept.
A really insightful deep dive into Parrot v. Adams. Thanks for breaking that down for us.